The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, if you think the college football season is over, we should get that old John Blutarski from Jim Belushi note in Animal House saying, nothing's over until we decide it is. And if you young guys haven't seen Animal House yet, go pick it up. It's still timeless. When we get to NFL Sunday, will Tom Brady be able to say nevermore for those recent struggles against the Ravens? And on tonight's college basketball card, we're going to focus on a coach who's going to have a very difficult time ducking this particular matchup.
So, Dave, Thursday, there was a ton of hoops action last night, both of the college and the NBA variety. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience today?
I saw an end-of-the-day bankroll statement that wasn't where it should have been. And we're going to talk about this because we can tie it into a letter that we read on the show last week about someone dealing with that confidence issue. If you're pretty far off of the markets, do you dare to trust your own opinion? And where we got beat yesterday is we didn't take advantage of what we call the second layer in the San Diego State-New Mexico game. As you know, that game opened 8.5, got pushed to 9.5. We could understand why that move took place. There were people waiting to bet against San Diego State on the road. We don't mind bucking that at all. It's play of the day for us on the show. Now here comes the secondary move. Someone came in again. Goes from 9.5 to 10.5. Yeah, we bet a little more, but not a lot more, because now you're concerned when you see that second move, is there somebody who sees something that we don't? Is there an injury? Is there something we're going to find out when the game starts? And it was that hesitation to not take a money line where you could have all gotten about 4-1 with a dead even team. You know, dead even team. San Diego State was every bit as good as New Mexico, maybe even better. Could have taken 4-1. Didn't do it. There should have been more money in the account this morning than there is. That's my bad. That little strength of conviction wasn't quite there. Teddy, a lot of barn burners last night. Nuggets got real interesting down the stretch. What do you bring in with you this morning?
Yeah, Nuggets made me sweat big time last night. They were able to pull it out in overtime with the straight-up win. And that's an interesting question, which I wasn't planning on getting into, but now you have me thinking about it, Dave. Maybe we'll talk about it on another show, but if you have a dog and you have them both straight up and on the money line, would you rather lose your money line wager and cash the dog ticket because that's going to be the bigger ticket of the two for you? Or would you rather risk overtime and maybe losing both? In my situation last night, I'd have been very happy to just say, hey, Denver, lose by one. I don't need to cash that money line ticket. It's a much smaller wager for me than my side wager. I'd have been happy for that to happen. But we had the OT. The OT worked out in our favor. Thank you. But bottom line, that's not what I wanted to talk about. You got me rambling, and I'm supposed to be doing tight first takes, Dave. Come on. Okay. Seriously, first take today is about one of the biggest differences between amateur bettors and professional bettors, and that is how you handle the big games. How do you handle the AFC and NFC championship games this week? How do you handle the Super Bowl? And obviously, these are big games for people. Professional bettors know at this time of the year, the lines are tight, man. You're not going to find many bargains, point spread mistakes, point spread disasters. No, it doesn't happen when there's only two games for the lines makers to handicap and for the betting market to react to. So you're not going to see these great line value situations that you might at other times of the year. So what do the pros do for these games? Normal unit size. They're not stepping it up. Oh, I got a weekend's worth of football action. I got to cram it into these two games. Unit size stays the same. Maybe you get a little bit involved with some prop wagers that you don't do during the regular season because there's going to be a wide variety of props out there. But the bottom line, no way we're going to load up on the championship game, say, oh, this is the biggest bet I'm going to make all year. Not going to happen. Standard unit sizes, that's a big difference between pros and amateurs. Hey, it's time to start breaking down the NFL playoffs today. I started with a little opening right there. And we're going to review the first Giants-49ers matchup in our postmortem. Money time, we're going to go deep into the AFC Championship game between New England and Baltimore. And we're going to finish off in money time tomorrow with further analysis of the Giants and 49ers. But as we say almost every day, this is your show. You tell us what you want to see, and we produce it. And yes, you can keep suggesting some sexy females. May take a while to get them on the show, but there will be plenty at the Cover Super Bowl party at Caesars Friday night. Remember, send those emails, party@covers.com. It's free. All you got to do is send an email to show up. Pretty girls, not so much here on the show, but there most assuredly. But for now.
We should say the pretty girls aren't free. Yeah. You know, this is Vegas.
Yeah, but they'll be there.
They'll be there.
Yeah, and the attendance is free. It doesn't cost anything to show up. So bottom line for now, let's go right to the mailbags. We got some letters to clean up and begin those NFL breakdowns. Let's start with this one from Sean. He says, I've been watching the show online and enjoy it almost daily. I've been staring down the displaced / incorrect lines for this weekend's NFL championship games, and I wanted to run a play by you that I would consider gold. I know teasers aren't necessarily part of your strategy, but hear me out on this one. I just noticed the line fell to +7 for the Ravens, though my local sportsbook, since the ship has already set sail on grabbing the Ravens at +9, I was considering throwing a teaser into play. I would play a 7.2 teamer that would look like this. Ravens +14 and over 43.5. I know the vigorish is a bit heavier as opposed to straight bets, but I'm confident that both of these are going to hit. I'm well aware that I'd be betting against one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, siding with the terrible QB, but despite how poorly Flacco performs, this team still disposed of the Patriots in the 09 wildcard round, with Flacco only putting up something like 40 total yards passing. Dave, how do we answer this email from Sean?
It's difficult to put this into a teaser because you're not getting much value for what you're buying in this situation. What's interesting, you say you're betting against Tom Brady, but part of it is if you have an over as part of that teaser, you may actually need a little bit of Brady in that equation. And we'll talk about Brady's matchups against the Ravens when we get to money time today. But it's just one of these situations where you're not really getting much for the vigorish of the teaser. The added points, particularly in the total, aren't really helping you that much. You don't have enough key numbers that are falling inside of that cycle to make it worthwhile. In the long run, you might be better off just simply playing the Ravens and playing the over, if you want to think about it that way. There's a little bit of a correlation that you would have going for you, and that if you get the Ravens plus those extra points, the over is not as negative as it is on the straight side. If you're talking about taking 7 and going over a 50, there's a negative correlation there because usually you think about favorite and over in sequences. So the teaser helps you a little bit on that front. But boy, you're just not getting much in return for that added vigorish.
Yeah, teaser rules, I've gone over them on the show a couple times, and I'm going to go over them as many times as necessary. Very specific rules for wise guys when we talk about how we bet teasers. Professional bettors bet teasers one way and one way only. NFL teasers, we like to bet 6-point teasers where you don't have to lay the extra juice as opposed to 6.5 or 7. We want to push big favorites of above a touchdown down to below a field goal. 7.5 down to 1.5, 8 down to 2, 8.5 down to 2.5. You want to take short underdogs of less than a field goal and tease them up above a touchdown. Take a 2.5-point dog, turn them into an 8.5-point dog. A 2-point dog into an 8, a 1.5-point dog into a 7.5-point dog. And that's it. That's it. Two-team 6-point NFL teasers. Tease the large favorites down. Tease the short dogs up. That's how professional bettors attack teasers. Those are positive expectation wagers, not something that we're afraid to get involved with. Get involved with them during the regular season on a weekly basis. But in the teaser that you proposed, you're teasing a total, which I never do, and you're taking a big dog and making it a bigger dog, which I never do. So good luck. I'm not going to talk you out of it. It's not how I would bet that particular wager, personally.
Let's also use that concept to explain a little bit of that New England-Baltimore line, because referring to the idea that, well, the nines are gone, the line has dropped, there really hasn't been that big of a line move on this game. The nines that were out there have come from books who don't want to get caught in that teaser trap that Teddy was just talking about. So you have a couple of books out there that simply don't use 7.5, 8, or 8.5 ever. They're going to use 7 and then adjust the money line off of it, or use 9 and adjust the money line off of it. So even though you might have seen on a screen somewhere that New England was 9, or someone says, oh yeah, they're 9 at this book, it wasn't a real 9. That was going to be a 9 that if you took it with Baltimore, it was going to come at 11 to 10. You're going to have to lay about $1.30, maybe even $1.35. The very fact that books do that to avoid those teaser situations tells you all you need to know about them. That's the category the books are afraid of. Anything that they let you do for a reason.
Keep those emails coming. The email address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And you can get involved in the posting forum. Got a great question in the posting forum from Top 5 Guy. We're going to answer that to open up tomorrow's show. All you got to do is just covers.com/posting forum. And, of course, I already talked about that Super Bowl party. Nearly 300 of you have already RSVP'd, said you're going to be here in Vegas on the Friday night before the big game. Join them. Party@covers.com. That's an email to send your RSVP. Again, it is free. Free food, free booze, free dancing girls, and hey, a chance to take a free shot at Dave and I when you get us 1-to-1.
Just be careful. Those dancing girls, they're never really free. When we come back, if you tore up some tickets on LSU against Alabama and thought your college football season was over, not quite yet. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. It's time for the postmortem, where we're going to take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
You probably thought that you'd seen the last of Kellen Moore as a college football player. And for many of you, that may well have been the case. You may have also thought that LSU-Alabama marked the end of the college football season, even if you chose to sit through all of that second half, which many of you probably did not. But if you're going to be part of the Vegas Sports Day crew, your schedule is going to change a little bit. This season, not quite over yet. It's time for the annual College All-Star Games over the next 2 weeks. The East-West Shrine Game in Florida this Saturday, and the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama next Saturday on the calendar. Most of you probably ignore these games. The general consensus in the marketplace that they bring too many wild card elements to be predictable. But Dave, I know you've had success with handicapping and betting these games in the past. Heck, I've bet some and cashed some tickets on your recommendation. While we can't necessarily title this as bowling for dollars, we can certainly entitle it bowling for loose change.
Anything that they have to put a line on is bettable and therefore beatable. And that's one of the great aspects of what we do. They have to set lines on these games. We don't have to bet. Why do the All-Star games fit? Because they set very generic lines. Year after year after year, you're going to see similar sides, similar totals, despite the fact that the matchups change consistently. Last year was an absolute gravy train. Probably had the worst group of senior quarterbacks that we had charted in over a decade coming out of college football. There were 3 All-Star games out there. Also, one more game in Florida that'll be played. You may or may not see a line on, but we'll let you know next week if they're going to post it. All 3 of those games last year, dead unders. They didn't adjust properly for how bad the quarterbacks were. So can you beat these All-Star games? Yes, you can. Let's break down the things that you should be looking for. Number one, we start with coaching. We want those that have the best X's and O's acumen, because you're going to put a game plan together real quickly. You do not want these spread option coaches, because you can't run that offense here. You have to run pro sets. So if you find coaches that run pro sets, and can get their guys, X's and O's, choreographed pretty quickly, big edge. Used to be great back in the 80s when Barry Switzer would coach an all-star game. And there's a wishbone guy. Didn't know anything about pro set offenses. There were some very awkward times there. Number two, obviously, we're going to look to the better passing quarterbacks. Similar to the coaches, quarterbacks from passing offenses. Kellen Moore, we're going to see in the Senior Bowl next week. We like those guys, whereas every once in a while, you'll see running quarterbacks on these rosters because they have to fill them out. If you see the passing QBs, there's an edge. Number three, look for correlations between quarterbacks, receivers, and tight ends. Every once in a while, you're going to find matchups where a quarterback has his own receiver, his own tight end, come from the same school, get that little chemistry edge, instead of coming out throwing to someone that you've never worked with before. That can be awfully important. And the final point, look for these cluster situations from good conferences, especially if it's a north-south type of game, where you get a lot of these Southeast Conference players playing for the South. No one produces better defensive backs than the Southeast Conference. If we find a cluster in the next week or two of SEC defensive backs, it's going to give us maybe a side or an under that we're going to be able to look at. So no, the season isn't over yet. We don't want to tell you to jump in and bet big in these games because you probably won't be able to. The limits will be a little bit lower, but there's still some money to be made. We'll be going over the East-West Shrine roster this afternoon. If we find something, we'll make that part of tomorrow's show. Now it's playoff time. And you know what's going to be great about Sunday in San Francisco? For all the talk we've done on this show and all the charting of the passing yards and how much the league changed this year, we got two teams that are going to try to take each other's heads off. That's what happened the first time around when they met 2 months ago, a 27-20 49er win. Now, we're going to break the matchups down in detail in Money Time tomorrow, but of course, all the time when we're looking at this, we want to see, is past possibly prologue? Are there some things we can learn about that first meeting that'll help us set it up when we get to Friday?
Well, the first meeting was defense, defense, defense for a long time. In fact, it took more than 42 minutes of playing time before either team reached the end zone. Not what you necessarily expect when you're looking at that 27-20 final score, the Niners with a win and cover in that first meeting. But once the offenses found their rhythm, they really kept it. You know, San Fran led 9-6 at halftime, a battle of field goals. The Giants' field goals came after their drive stalled on the 6- and 9-yard line. The 49ers got theirs after reaching the 19, 35, and 22-yard line. So the Giants deeper into San Francisco territory, but still had to settle for three. San Fran added another field goal early in the third quarter, 12-6 at that point, and then they slugged it out with a couple of punts before we saw some fireworks. Bang, Eli Manning to Mario Manningham, 13-12 Giants. Bang, Alex Smith to Vernon Davis, and a two-point conversion to follow, 20-13 San Fran. Kendall Hunter, 17-yard TD run, 27-13 San Fran. Giants rally back, Manning to Hakeem Nicks, 27-20. Giants got the ball back on their 20 with 6:35 remaining, a chance to drive for the tie, and it looked like they were on their way. First and 10 at the San Fran 18-yard line with a minute and 53 seconds remaining in that contest. But after gaining 8 yards on first down, the next three plays produced nothing, two incompletions and a run that was stuffed, and Alex Smith, all he had to do was take a knee at that point. San Fran, like I said, with the 27-20 victory. When all the counting was done, the Giants had 21 first downs and 395 yards. San Fran, 16-305. Neither team ran the ball well in that game. For New York, it was Brandon Jacobs carrying the load. With Ahmad Bradshaw out, Jacobs had 18 carries for 55 yards. Frank Gore got a net gain of 0 yards on 6 carries for San Fran, although Kendall Hunter and Anthony Dixon combined 8 carries for 50 yards. Bottom line, both teams successful through the air, not successful on the ground. The quarterback play was close. Alex Smith had a single-game passer rating of 85.7. Eli Manning, 74.5.
84.5, a typo by me.
Oh, 80.
So that's how close they were.
84.5. Yeah. 84.5. So one guy's 85.7, the other guy's 84.5. Bottom line, very, very close when it comes to the game on the field, when it comes to the quarterback matchup. Look like two even teams. But here's a key. As we noted a minute ago, Ahmad Bradshaw did not play in that game for the Giants. Neither did their pass-rushing force, Justin Tuck, or key linebacker Michael Boley, who sat out the second half when the 49ers went on their 2 touchdown drives. All three of those guys healthy and expected to play this week for the G-men. Meanwhile, for San Fran, key offensive cog in that game was Delanie Walker, who caught 6 passes for 69 yards. But Walker hasn't played since breaking his jaw at Seattle on Christmas Eve. They're hoping to get him back this week, but he can be listed as no better than questionable as of right now. The bottom line in that game, 2 pretty even teams in a game that nearly went to overtime. In Money Time tomorrow, we're going to tell you how we're going to process this information moving forward.
Now it's time to go forward for Money Time tonight. And when we talk about the heat in Miami, the real key actually might be a thermometer reading. We'll explain what that means as Vegas Sports Day comes right back.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name of my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport across the board, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start off in Miami, where tonight the Miami Heat, about a 5.5-point home favorite against the L.A. Lakers.
Some fascinating numbers coming out of Miami right now, because Dwayne Wade's not going to play tonight. We think LeBron James will. He missed the shoot-around because of the flu, but he expects to be out there. He's not going to pass up a game like this. Take a look at these numbers. Miami with Dwayne Wade on the court this year. The Heat go 5-4. They lose to the spread by 32.5 points. That's a pretty ugly performance from a market perception standpoint. The four games without Wade, the Heat are 4-0, beat the spread by 43.5 points. What does that mean? Probably nothing. It's fun with numbers, the way that we can juggle that out there a little bit. But one of the things we've felt from day one, and of course we weren't on the air last year to talk about it, that Wade-James combination is an awfully good one, but it's not one where the two actually enhance each other. Their styles are a little bit too similar so that each does not make the other better. That's why Miami's been able to play successfully without one or the other, and of course they won a game this year without both of them. So no Wade tonight, but we do expect to see LeBron James. The question is going to be, can James and the Heat force the tempo and get the pace where they want it? Because the Lakers want to slog, and as we say so often, it's so much harder to speed a team up than it is to slow them down.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers really show how L.A. wants to slog. Ranked number 21 in pace, but number 3 in rebounding, number 5 in defense, or total defense, all of which are elements that tell us L.A. wants to do anything but run with Miami. And you know, the Lakers have not played particularly well on the highway. You've seen them on the highway 4 times in their last 10 games. They lose at Denver, fail to cover. They lose at Portland, fail to cover. They win at Utah in overtime, but they're laying points in that game, so you can easily grade that as an L because they lost in regulation against the point spread. And then, of course, against the Clippers, losing by 8 this past weekend, even though that is, you know, considered a road game. You don't necessarily want to count that as a road game in your database. Bottom line is, Lakers, a team that we think of as being, you know, the same wherever they play. And a lot of times you like laying a shorter price with L.A. or taking points with L.A. on the highway as opposed to laying a big price for them at the Staples Center. Well, so far this year's team hasn't been able to really put it together in these hostile road environments. For Miami, yeah, sure, they don't have Dwayne Wade. Oh, what'd they have? They got Mike Miller, who hit 6 of 6 from three-point range versus San Antonio the other night. One of the best, maybe the best quarter of basketball we've seen any team play all year in that 39-12 annihilation against a pretty good Spurs team. A Spurs team that was good enough to come back and beat Orlando on the highway last night. So Miami in this price range, even without Wade, not a team I'm necessarily looking to stand in front of, although maybe you want to hedge off a little bit, maybe take a look at the under as well.
So again, the latest word, LeBron James probably will play tonight. You might see some Eddie Curry, by the way, in Miami for the first time. Not that it's going to be a big deal later, but against the Lakers, it does matter just a little bit. Now let's head on to the college ranks. Let's go to Eugene, Oregon. Right now, the Oregon Ducks, a 6.5-point favorite over Kevin O'Neill and his dwindling Southern Cal Trojans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, USC's got issues galore. You know, they lost Gio Fontaine before the season started. He was projected to be, you know, the guy who can absolutely fill it up, projected to run the offense, but he hasn't been with the team all year. Then they lost Curtis Washington. And now they may be without Aaron Fuller, who's their leading rebounder and second leading scorer. He's a question mark for tonight. Even if he plays, not likely to be at 100%. That's some key cogs. And when we look at the Trojans' struggles, with even with Fuller on the court, we're talking about 0-5 opening to the Pac-12. We're talking about 47 points per game for a college basketball team offensively. That's not going to cut it. 34% shooting. You know, it just can't find the bottom of the rim or the bottom of the net, whatever. You know, they're finding a lot of rim, not much bottom of the net. From three-point range, how about 23% shooting from beyond the arc? From the free throw line, this team can't even shoot and make a bucket when no one's guarding them. 55% for the charity stripe. With those type of offensive numbers, a hostile environment in Eugene, boy, it's not going to be easy for USC tonight, is it, Dave?
Something we like coming from Dana Altman right now, too, because we always thought he was a good game plan guy when he was back at Creighton. He changes defense a lot. He has the ability to adapt for opponents. Well, now it's his second go-round in Pac-12 play. One of the things we like to do a lot when they have these 2 and 3 cycles is focus on the first game of the cycle and the second. That first game of the cycle means you've had several days to put a game plan together. Here's where we see maybe some of Altman's X's and O's in play. So far this year, 3-0 straight up and against the spread in the first leg of these trips, beating the spread by 44 points. That's 15 points per game. His two head-to-heads against O'Neill last year, wins of both, beats the spread by 30.5, 15 points per game. And we finally are seeing the pieces come together the right way for Oregon. They started a little bit slow, despite the fact that it looks like a veteran lineup. You've got 5 seniors and 2 juniors in the rotation, 3 transfers in this Oregon rotation right now. So it took a little bit of time for them to assimilate. But they're getting it right now. It's easier for seniors as transfers because they've got that experience under their belts. They bottomed out against Cal 2 weeks ago, played their worst conference game of the year, but rebounded from that to sweep the Arizona schools on the road. That's a good sign. Well, I think we're going to see a confident Oregon team taking the court tonight.
Let's go to Blacksburg, Virginia, where tonight the North Carolina Tar Heels, they've been bet up to about a 7-point favorite over the struggling Virginia Tech Hokies. And Dave, the big question here, can the Tar Heels bounce back? This is a team that took a little bit of a whipping the last time they took the floor.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit in a postmortem segment earlier in the week, that Carolina didn't just get beat. They got manhandled. They got pushed around pretty bad at Florida State. One of the worst defeats you're ever going to see for a team this good. But it raises a question some have had all along about the Tar Heels. They can run. They can shoot. They have a few shot blockers. But where's that toughness? Where's that physical tenacity around the basket where you intimidate other teams a little bit? We don't have to raise the question ourselves anymore. Roy Williams talked about this for us, and let's take Roy's quotes to heart because this really gets to the crux of the matter when we break this game down tonight. Coming from Williams, says, I think they care a great deal, but we don't have any of those wacko guys flying around. Jared Haas was like a kamikaze. George Karl and Steve Prebis, before you were even born, those guys really set the tone for everybody. We don't have that. Tyler Hansborough, Bobby Fraser, Jackie Manuel, Sean May, those guys, they had intensity on game night. And this group does not have the intensity that we want. Now, we've heard it's been the toughest week of practice for the Tar Heels this week in several years. Is that enough to get the toughness out of this group? Or is it just simply a bunch of good athletes who don't have that particular type of player?
Well, on the other hand, you know, if we talk about North Carolina's issues with toughness, I think Virginia Tech has issues with talent, and certainly they have issues on the experience side of the equation. This is not a team that can handle what North Carolina does the way that Florida State did. Yeah, they won outright here, and they covered as a dog in Chapel Hill last year, but that was a veteran team. This is a rebuilding team. It's a young group, and they are struggling. They've scored 57 points per game on their way to an 0-3 straight up and ATS start in ACC play. They've lost to the spread by nearly 30 points during that span. And They lost to BC this past week. And I know BC's 2-1 right now. Might be the only two wins in conference play they get this year. That, a bad loss for Virginia Tech. We look at the shooting right now, you know, against BC, again, a team that doesn't play defense, 35%. They lose the boards by 12 against a smaller team. Eric Green did score 40 in the first two ACC games for Virginia Tech and then didn't play against BC. He has returned to practice, a question mark for tonight. I would not want the Hokies, well, I wouldn't even think about playing the Hokies here without Green in the lineup.
Up next, AFC Championship time. So it's your patriotic duty to keep watching. This is Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Foxborough, Massachusetts, where tonight, on Sunday, the New England Patriots are going to be 7-point favorites over the Baltimore Ravens. At least they're currently 7-point favorites. We'll see where the market goes with this one. Total of 50.5, and we've seen movement on both the side and total in this one. New England opened as low as 6, 6.5, bet up as high as 7.5, even the nines we were talking about now bet down to 7. The total, as all, you know, it's a Patriots game. You know which way it's going. It's getting bet up, especially with the weather, you know, reasonable for New England at this time of year. Partly cloudy, southeast wind of 7 to 12 miles an hour. Kickoff temperature, 36 degrees. Wind chill, 29. Surely not a bad weather day in New England on Sunday.
New England obviously brings the sex appeal. Tom Brady, fantastic quarterback, explosive plays, Bill Belichick, and that wonderful history that he has. Ravens, they don't bring the market respect because they win a little bit different way. New England wins because of what they do right. The Ravens win because of what they don't do wrong. And that's a big handicapping element to understand. When you're taking an underdog, we like to use that phrase, a tough out, sort of like we did with San Diego State and Denver yesterday, teams that have that tough out aspect to them. The Ravens are that. You know, when this line was sitting at 7.5, it struck us like, well, if you don't make a lot of mistakes and you don't have a weakness anywhere, how often do you get beat by more than 7.5 points? Under John Harbaugh, how about 63-8 if you attach the 7.5 to every one of those Raven games? And I think we might be looking at more of the same again here. No, they did almost nothing that had any sex appeal in beating Houston last week. But here's what you should notice. Turnovers, 0. Penalties, 0. That's enough to get you a win against a team like Houston. But when you take that fundamental aspect out as an underdog, it's enough to keep you in a game because they're not going to do something to take themselves out of the game. They're not going to give the football away. They're not going to commit silly penalties. They're number 4 in the NFL this year for fewest penalties. So kind of our starting point when we begin to break this down is the Ravens can hang around in games like this. But now we run into that little bit of an issue. One of the quarterbacks in this game is better than the other one.
Yeah, more than a little bit better. Obviously, we're talking about Tom Brady. And, you know, yes, Baltimore last week, no penalties, no turnovers. That was last week. That was at home. Now, New England's going to remember. New England's in playoff revenge. They remember what happened the last time Baltimore came to visit them in the postseason. And this is a Patriots team that lives and dies with a positive turnover differential. Last year, led the NFL with a plus 28 differential. Wasn't good enough to get him the Super Bowl. Wasn't good enough to get him even a single postseason win. But in the regular season, they earned that home field edge with that monster ratio. This year, wasn't quite as good. Only a plus 17 for New England. But still, over the two-year span, plus 45. This is a team that forces their opponents into making mistakes without making mistakes of their own. And when we look at Baltimore over the course of the season, this is a team. They lost at Tennessee. They lost at Jacksonville. They lost at Seattle. They lost at San Diego. All teams didn't make the postseason, not playoff quality foes. And yet Baltimore, against all of them, struggling, struggling, struggling in all kinds of different ways. We look at the Ravens last week when they played so well. They scored 17 points in the first quarter. The next three quarters, they got a grand total of a field goal. And I know there was a goal line stand in there, but Ed Reed's calling out Joe Flacco this week. I mean, the Flacco-Brady comparison is no comparison. Dave, Joe Flacco, is he Gus Frat?
That's part of the fears, if you want to build a Baltimore case, is that Joe Flacco hasn't gotten any better from day one. You wanted to really like him at first. Here's a big guy. He's got a strong arm. He's a physical player. But he hasn't gotten better. Could we have one of these Gus Frat careers where you're a journeyman all the way through? But if you like Baltimore, should those road performances Teddy talked about, should they scare you? Not really, because here's what we saw with the Ravens this year. When you've got Ed Reed, you've got Lewis, you've got a lot of these veterans that get up for the big games, that was their issue. As bad as they were against weak opponents, they had seven games against playoff teams. How they do? They won all of them. Six of the seven by at least a full touchdown. It shows that they weren't necessarily able to get motivated every week, and that happens when you're a veteran. You know, when you're Lewis and when you're Reed, you have those high notes that you hit, but you can't quite bring it every week. Now let's contrast that a little bit. 7-0 against playoff teams. Think about this for the Patriots. They still haven't beaten a winning team all season. Now that Denver, which backed their way into the playoffs, you know, 500 regular season, 500 when you go 1-1 in the playoffs, New England still doesn't have one single win all year over a team that finished with a winning record. Could that be something that maybe the markets have missed a little bit in their perceptions?
Well, we're talking about stuff the markets missed. You're probably talking about a defensive gap here. That's really significant. We talk about Baltimore and New England based on the numbers. The numbers show us very clearly. For the season, Baltimore allowed 1,955 fewer yards than the Patriots. I call that fairly significant. 1.6 yards per play less against the pass. 1.1 yards per play less against the run. Defensively, there's no comparison between these two teams, at least when we look at regular season numbers. Now, we saw a very different defensive game plan from New England last week. Admittedly, against Tim Tebow and the Broncos, who were outclassed in that ballgame, and the outclassed is putting it nicely. But we've also seen, you know, what happened in Week 17 against Buffalo, where the Bills got out to that 21-0 start against New England and then were shut down the rest of the game. We talk about in-game adjustments. We talk about the ability to game plan for a specific team. Aren't many coaches a whole lot better than Bill Belichick and his staff at performing those particular tasks?
So a lot going on in that matchup for Sunday. Again, the conundrum, the defensive gap is wide. The quarterback gap just as wide. Those are going to be the keys to breaking that one down. But you're going to have more money in your pocket when that one starts, because we've got one for you tonight. We're going to go back to Eugene, Oregon, and let's look at the Oregon Ducks minus at 6.5 against Southern Cal as the Vegas sports day play of the day. Southern Cal, a team with only one player, averaging in double figures, very hard-pressed to find points in their home games. They're going to be very weak playing from behind on the road, because their lack of depth will catch up with them gradually over this conference schedule. A confident Oregon team, no surprise if they stretch this margin out into double figures tonight.
Come on, Dave. Let's do a little quack quack for them. Quack! No duck references? You're just going to give Oregon?
No duck references.
That look right there?
We did one at the opening tease. That was enough.
Okay.
That was enough.
One quack is enough, and one show is enough. That's going to wrap it up for Thursday. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck.